The Contenders is a proud member of the Cage Club Podcast Network.
For other great shows about movies and pop culture, go visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
This is craziness, Dr. Pometer.
Please call me Jim.
No, I won't.
Okay, don't. Just Dr. Pometer is fine.
I don't care if she is a pie genius. I wouldn't trade places with her. No.
I hate my husband, Pie.
I don't think we can write that on the menu board, huh?
Shouldn't be making jokes like that.
I want you the hell out of my life. You are never to touch me ever again. I am done with you.
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I am Tobin Addington.
And I am Aislinn Addington. Today, we're going to be talking about the 2007 film Waitress.
Yes. Which I had not seen before.
No, this is... So, basically, we had to start a podcast for you to do me the favor of watching this movie, which I have been asking for a long time. Listeners, I remember specifically once, I know I've done it a couple times, but specifically asking Tobin to watch this movie because I wanted to know what, from an educated filmmaker perspective, like, what is wrong with it? Because I'm not saying I think it's perfect, but I just think it's a fantastic story creatively told. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to know kind of I wanted Tobin to pick it apart just from that perspective, because from mine, it's great. And so I'm just going to go keep talking about how I think it's great for a minute. So sharing our histories with this movie, at the time that it came out, I just started grad school. Yeah.
2007.
Grad school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And already I was a huge Nathan Fillion fan. Pre-Castle, folks. This is all Captain Mel Reynolds right here. Loved it. And I'm okay with Felicity. I didn't have strong feelings. On this feminist podcast, Nathan Fillion was my way in.
Gateway.
I went with my dear friend, Sean. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
Probably Nathan Fillion's other biggest fan. We might have to, have a competition for that later, but also a big fan. We went to the theater and I thought, oh, wow, we are here early. We're the only ones here. That's weird at 7 o'clock at night. And the power had gone out at the movie theater.
Oh.
So it took a second. I mean, we really had to work for it to see this film. And I saw it, and there were many things even at that time that I appreciated about it, which we'll get into. And I, immediately purchased it, and my appreciation grew as the story sort of unfolded, which Tobin will tell us about in a minute. But Tobin, how did you find this movie?
Well, I remember when this came out, partly because of the tragic and untimely death of the director, writer, star of the movie, or co-star of the movie. I was just leaving grad school, living in New York at the time, and it was, she was. In the independent film community, and it was a real shocking thing. And she died just before. This gets into our two bits, but I'm
sure.
It's part of my history. That she was killed just before the film was selected for Sundance, where it made its debut. So she didn't even get to learn that her film was going to debut at this prestigious film festival. Various film critic associations made awards in her honor. And so she was in my consciousness, and so was the movie. And I don't remember why I didn't go to it as it first was playing. I can't tell you why. I don't remember any reason. And I do remember you talking about it all along. And I remember when the musical, the Broadway musical, yes, came about. Everybody in my life was, talking about it and singing from it. And so, yeah, I wasn't actively avoiding it. I don't know what happened.
I kept trying to put it in your path, friend.
You did. And I did. So I did not see it until today.
I love this because I have such a long, I feel like our histories do start around the same place, But
yeah, for sure.
In terms of viewing the film, it's very different because this is probably my 50th watching. I mean, it's one of the, so I love it. It's great. Well, we'll talk about whether it's great or not, but you know, I love it. It's great. And I watch it with intention, but it's also one that when I'm quilting, because I'm really a very old lady, I'll have on in the background, or when I'm cooking, I'll have on in the background. Like it is a soundtrack, you know, of my life kind of thing. So
for sure.
Okay. So you mentioned, is there anything else to say in your two bits around, her tragic death?
Not for me. I was sort of wondering if you had anything, just since you know the film so much more. I wondered if you knew any other sort of tidbits of how the film came together, since most of what I know about it is what happened sort of after the fact.
Right. And I would – I don't know if this is a place to add this, but to add more tragedy on tragedy, she had a young child who plays Lulu at the end.
Oh, I wondered about that. Oh, breaks my heart.
No.
Oh.
Okay, we're fine. Just shit together, Addington. Yeah, I mean, anything else I have to say is just adds to more tragedy, so I'm going to be done with that. But the musical had the, I think, misfortune of debuting the same year as Hamilton.
Yeah, that's kind of unfair for anything, for a juggernaut like Hamilton to come along. It's no one wants that comparison. But it's continued to run, and it's
touring. It will be in Portland next week.
Oh wow! As of the recording of this, or the release of it.
Oh, pardon me. Equally. True. Okay. It's here for about a week. So
Okay. All right. So you have your chance. If you're in the Portland area, get yourself to Waitress the Musical.
Please do. It's exciting. And also there is, like you said, there are, like you say, awards, etc. in her name. There's also an Adrienne Shelley Foundation to support female filmmakers. So if you're interested in that, find the website. Google is your friend. And I would like to continue to name women.
Yeah, let's do it. Would you please give us the names of some of the ladies in charge, women involved in major roles in Waitress?
Absolutely. Sorry.
It's all right.
Okay. Writer-director Adrienne Shelley. Lead roles include Carrie Russell, Cheryl Hines, and Adrienne Shelley. Producers Danielle Renfro-Barons and Bridget Mueller. Editor Annette Davey. All right. And Tobin, let's have, I'm so excited. Did you write this one?
I did, just literally moments ago. So
okay, I'm so excited. I want to hear.
You'll have to forgive me for any, you have to correct any errors that I have here. Or,
right?
Or,
mine would have been, 17 pages long. So I'm glad it was your job.
Mine is long. I did sort of keep going. There were so many things I wanted to include. So here is my brief plot rundown, fresh from seeing Waitress. Carrie Russell plays Jenna Hunterson, a pie diner waitress with two great friends, a somewhat miraculous ability to create and bake pies for literally any occasion, and an awful abusive husband. Plus, she's pregnant, a condition that leaves her extremely conflicted. Into the mix steps a goofy, handsome, attentive, and married OBGYN played by Nathan Fillion. The two jump into an affair, further complicating Jenna's already chaotic life. As the baby arrives, Jenna finally accepts her own strength, rejects both men, and goes on to live her dream, opening her own pie place named after her adorable daughter.
Lovely. I love it.
Thanks.
Doesn't it just sound like a movie you want to watch?
You know, it really does sound like a movie that you want to watch not just once, but more than once.
Many times.
Yeah.
It is. So I think, to start, it is incredibly watchable. Now, you avoided it.
Well, that sounds like put a lot of intention into it.
Okay, sorry. You didn't make time or space in your life for it.
That's
is that
true.
Better?
That's true.
And this is going to get to kind of a major issue in the film I'd like your input on. I immediately told our mother, I love this movie. Watch this movie. And she did not care for it.
Really?
Couple of things.
Okay.
One, because Nathan Fillion had just, by the time it came out, he had just played a distasteful character on Desperate Housewives. So she couldn't get that. He was also a gynecologist. At the time, he made some jokes like, do you want to get typecast? No. Do you want to get typecast as a gynecologist? Because, you know, vaginas are funny. love him still. It's okay. So she didn't care for it. One, because of the Nathan Fillion conflicts. And then also because, and I think this might be true of a whole swath of folks, a woman unhappy about becoming a mother doesn't sit kind of well. So it took her watching it with me in the room.
Oh, interesting.
With me laughing and me crying and me enjoying it to really, for her to appreciate it. And then since, of course, she did fall in love, as everyone in her demographic did, with Castle.
Right. Then Nathan, so now, once again, is the way in.
Exactly. I mean, he is a gateway drug. I love it. let's start with that about how we, what we expect of women and what being a woman includes and how motherhood is part of that. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about, as you mentioned, her being deeply conflicted about her situation?
I think that's one of the great strengths of the movie. I think that the gulf between how parents and mothers in particular are quote unquote supposed to feel about having children and how they're expected to feel about having children versus how it actually feels is, I think, sort of unexplored and in drama, in movies. And when it is explored, often played purely for laughs. And, you'll see postpartum depression, especially on TV, that you'll see some storylines that have having to do with conflicted feelings after a baby arrives. But the whole, the during the pregnancy part, it felt very fresh and very real. And I really found that compelling. And I think that it's a combination of the way the part is written and the way Keri Russell plays it. She's empathetic the entire time. It's just that she is in her circumstances and the place she is as a character and who she is. She is, and particularly who she's married to. that being a symptom of whatever else is going on, or maybe a cause, but at least a symptom. That is totally understandable that she has feelings, but also it's okay to have conflicted feelings about having children. That seems totally fair. And so I had that note in the movie. I did not know that had been a sticking point for some people. But one of my notes as I was watching the movie was how I felt like that. I thought that was underrepresented and cool to see.
I mean, it's going to be no surprise here, but I 100% agree with you on that. underrepresented is a great word for it. I think it helped. So, so sorry.
That's okay. It's okay.
Okay.
Take your time.
I think it helped. Personally, it helped with that conversation about having children and the choice or ability to do that, for her to say, not everyone wants to be a mom. It doesn't make me a bad person. There are not enough people saying that. And
right.
I am lucky to have had people saying that around me in my life, but you don't see that. When I first saw this movie, I was child free. And now I'm childless. I feel like I'm a little bit of both. And so from both perspectives, I absolutely appreciate her giving voice to that. And also that she continues to stand up for herself in that way that, and Mrs. Henderson does not like to be congratulated.
Yes, exactly.
That just, and also, but also then having kind of the support of her doctor separate from the affair part.
Right.
That,
right.
Okay. This is my patient. This is what she needs. And I'm going to follow that.
Right.
Is just beautiful to see. And I think, again, very personally, has helped me sort of stand up for myself medically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. These are my needs and this is where I'm at. And you got to be on my team. And again, separate from the affair, I really appreciated how Dr. Pometer was on her team.
Yeah, exactly. And I get the sense from the character that he would have been on her team if he had not been attracted to her and they had not been having an affair. It feels like the kind of doctor that he is. And one of the things I love about this movie is that so all of the characters are so completely dimensional, it almost hurts. Everybody, yeah, everybody. It doesn't mean you like them. It doesn't mean that you want to be friends with them. It doesn't mean that you know, I mean, Jeremy Sisto is a, I mean, we'll get there. But Nathan Fillion, just to have this character who in almost every other movie is the perfect person for her, and they end the movie together, and he is so attentive to her. There's a scene where he comes over to her house later in the movie, sort of after they've kind of broken up, and then after she's broken up with him, and then he comes over to her house after her husband goes to work, and he asks for her to teach him how to bake a pie. Oh,
I know.
Oh.
Just somebody to hold you for 20 minutes.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so they have this, he's so attentive and so giving. And then you know he's married, but you don't know what the circumstances of his marriage are. And you wonder, I'm assuming watching this movie for the first time, not knowing about it, that, oh, there's going to be something. He's only married in name, or he's married to help someone out of a jam, but he's not actually like, you know what I mean? It felt to me watching the movie as though that was going to be that was going to be overcome by the movie to allow these two people to be together, which would not have been unsatisfying to me. I mean, it's Nathan Fillion, for crying out loud. But then it's complicated by the fact that you know, when we meet her, she adores the wife, Nathan Fillion's wife. Does she have a name? I can't remember if we ever get her name.
The other Dr. Pometer, I think.
Yes, right, Dr. Pometer. Right. That she, you know, they seem like that it's not the usual easy way out there.
Right. She seems perfectly lovely in the one scene we see her in. Yeah, I mean, I also appreciate the flawed nature of it. And I think that in a film that has certainly an element of heightened reality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Magical Pies a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the magic of Shaka Law, but it's like on that road.
Right.
And whenever you hear the classical, you know, music and the camera changes, you know, there's an element of, it's a little fantastic.
Yeah.
To then have something like these flawed characters who are grounded in reality is an interesting juxtaposition. Mm-hmm. And I think I do appreciate the creativity of, in those moments that are a little extra, I feel like that's in her mind a little bit, like where from her perspective, that's how it feels. When they kiss and it suddenly sweeps around them, that happens a couple times.
Yes,
like Mary
yes, Figaro, I see. Yes,
and
yes,
with
yes.
The mom, the sort of burned out mom with the toddler.
Yep.
It also like then that comes up more than once.
Yep.
And then when it's close up on her face and it's short skirt, long jacket.
Yep.
And her face changes.
Mm-hmm.
Those were sort of the heightened moments that I was referring to. But also, thank you for bringing up the pies. I loved that because again, it's just very much inside her head. You know, when I'm about to get up in the morning, I make myself a list for the first 5 minutes. Like, okay, I'm going to get up. I'm going to let the dog out. I'm going to do this and do that. And it felt very much like that to me. So it was, we are just so, you know, deeply close to Jenna's story, but in a world, like you say, filled with, I agree that folks that are fleshed out, and that must be why I am so emotional about it, because they all are so dimensional that it does hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I love her two friends. Let's talk a little bit more about the women and then we can switch to the
definitely.
Men. So Cheryl Hines being hard to age in this movie, I feel like she's one who sort of is has a lot of hair and a lot of makeup to maybe look younger, but it's sort of, I think she feels older.
Yeah. I think we're meant to, I think we're meant to think she's a little bit older than they are.
Older than them.
That's my guess.
And in an unhappy marriage to a, what they say is a very old and very sick man. We never see him. And also has a bit of a body dysmorphic idea about her breast that one is sits a lot higher than the other.
Yes.
And that's a, I mean, it's a weird, it's a, this is a quirky movie.
Yeah, for
if
sure.
If you don't like quirk,
yeah,
walk away.
Yeah, yeah.
This is quirky AF.
Yeah.
In that she constantly talks about one of her breasts being much higher than the other. And I love there's at one point finally when Jenna says, I don't know how to tell you this. There's nothing wrong. Like, just ridiculous. And then the other waitress, played by Adrienne Shelley, is we hear at the at the beginning about how she's single and very much alone and kind of trying to navigate that and trying to decide whether or not she wants to date and find a partner or not. And I liked that complexity of that too. You know, she's out there looking, but there's a part of her that does just want to be at home, having dinner by herself. And, she also seems to have a poor self-concept, a little bit, some low self-esteem. And what I love what we're talking about that is you could say Jenna also, sure, has some self-esteem issues, but whenever it's about the pies and it's about her talent, she's not self-deprecating about that. She's self-deprecating about everything else, but she knows her strength in there. And I heard a quote recently that someone said, if women knew the wisdom of their bodies, we wouldn't be in this situation. And I feel like she knows the wisdom of her body in her, the talent, the skill that's been passed down to her and the talent that she has in this. I loved that, like you say, they're so well-rounded. There's complexity. You can be proud of yourself for one thing. But then also feel bad about yourself for something else. And that can happen at the same time. And so, and these three women support each other.
I love how kind they are to one another. They're, and they don't really let each other get away with much. I mean,
no.
they call things out, right? Like they call things out in sometimes in very impassioned ways, you know, like it's not like they're always joined at the hip and it's just yes, 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 but they'll do things for each other. They'll do favors for each other. They'll, you know, and they'll support each other. I think a beautiful, as you say, quirky, but not entirely sort of varnished look at this what felt like a very true female friendship between these three.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. They do call each other out, which I appreciate as someone who does that and has that done to me. But they resolve it, which is the other part, that they can hurt each other's feelings and then come back around and then show up for each other. And it didn't, they were sidekicks, but they weren't relegated to being sidekicks. You could easily open another window and have the story of Cheryl Hines.
Right.
Or have the story of Adrienne Shelley, independent of the Jenna situation. And from my understanding, I have not yet seen it live, but that is also a significant part of the Broadway musical that these three women are still at the core of it and all have their own stories. But
And they're all, everybody's flawed. Like there's nobody's movie who's not, some more flawed than others, but everybody has flaws and everybody has, it's not necessarily, I guess Dawn, the Adrienne Shelley character, she does have an arc. The Cheryl Hines character, Becky, has maybe a little bit less of an arc, but there's a story going on. Like their lives are moving forward in the course of this movie. Everybody's lives are moving forward. Mm-hmm. Things are changing. The decisions they're making are going to affect their lives moving forward. You know, so sometimes you'll have a movie, especially quirky indie movies, where it's so centered around the main character that everybody else is just sort of hovering there in the movie and they don't really have lives of their own. I think it shows that Adrienne Shelley was an actor prior to being a filmmaker, because she's writing so many great parts, not just great lines, but great parts for these actors. And you can see actors, you know, all these three women, Andrew Griffith, you see these actors like finding things to mine in these parts and showing a lot of different colors to these characters who on the surface seem kind of simple maybe, or, you know, they're kind of down home and kind and simple and there's wisdom. And, you know, but there's more to it than that. They feel much more real than that.
Agreed. You're interested. I feel like I'm interested in what they all have to do. You know, someone else comes on screen. I think, okay, yeah, what's going on with that? Or, oh, yeah, you know, we see someone we haven't seen in a while. Oh, yeah. What was that about?
Right.
Versus, okay, I have to get through this to get back to this poor pregnant lady.
Right, right.
So, yeah, you mentioned Andy Griffith. And, I mean, I find him to be a delight in this.
yes.
You know, no nonsense, but also doing that thing. And maybe it is just a trope of storytelling, but I feel like there's something true about it where you have to be a sort of special person to see through the gruff.
Yeah.
In someone else. And so, you know, the other two waitresses avoid him, don't want to be around him. He owns the pie diner. It's Joe's, as he tell you, it's Joe's Pie Diner.
Yes.
And they just don't want, he's just, you know, grumpy and fickle and what have you. But Jenna can handle him. And not only that.
Becky doesn't want to wait on him.
Yeah,
Cheryl Hines doesn't want to. Yeah, yeah.
I think they are a little bit delighted by each other. There's a kindred spirit nature in there. And it is, I think at the end of their first exchange, you know, she says, you're not as mean as you want people to think you are.
Yeah.
And
right. Then he, right.
You know, sort of, oh, hum-ha. And, can we push it all the way forward and just do Andy Griffith for a minute?
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, he's around, he's in the pie diner, he's in diner a couple times eating, and then you see him at Don's wedding. And then at the end, he's in the hospital at the same time as Jenna, having a, you know, he was saying he was having a small liver operation and joking he might even die. And
right.
She's there having her baby, and he gives her a card and says, open it later. And it turns out the card has a check in it, which gives her the funds to, you know, pull herself out of the situation that she's in.
Right.
But what I love is she doesn't even know that at the time that she tells her husband off. Right.
Yes,
you know what I mean? Like she's
exactly.
made that decision. And then there's this. And one thing just to add, because I have watched the behind the scenes, the DVD many times. Adrienne Shelley very specifically blurred, isn't the word, obscured the number.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because she wanted it to be sort of appropriate at different times.
Yeah.
I mean, this does feel a little bit older than current, but you don't know, small town. I mean,
yeah,
there are pay phones, but, you know, so that dates it a little bit. But, you know, you could put it in, you know, someone misspoke recently and said in front of me that the it was based on a movie from the 80s. The play was based on a movie from the 80s. And like. No, it wasn't. But could it have happened in the 80s?
Right, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I love that, just that little detail to continue the magic. So it's not, you know, $25,000. That means one thing here, one thing there. But,
right.
But so, you know, Joe turns out to be a little bit of a guardian angel at the end. But more in the middle, you know, really does, he tells her several times to start fresh.
Yeah, right. In fact, writes that on the card to her. Yeah.
I tell ya, just tears over here.
It's so smart. This movie is really smartly put together in a way that's kind of under the radar a little bit. I think because it is so whimsical and because there is a lot
disarming.
Of kindness in it, it's very disarming. It's such, that's a great way to say it. And so it's, I think, easy. I didn't expect this level of sophistication from the movie. The movie, as I imagined it from sort of cultural osmosis, was as a sweet little indie movie, and it is. But it's not a sweet little indie movie without a ton of craft and a lot of sophistication. There's a lot of intention put into, especially the way these characters are written and the way the performances are sort of put together here, and is making a few sort of unusual strong choices, you know, as some of which we've talked about her, you know, the closing image being her as a single mom with this daughter, mm-hmm. right? Like, this is not a movie that ends with a traditional nuclear family, heteronormative, here's mommy, daddy, and kid. It's something else. There's a different kind of independence that this movie is celebrating in a way that I think is, it may be not radical, but as we said before, underrepresented. This movie is sweet, but it's not just sweet.
Mm-hmm. Like a good pie.
Like a good pie. like a good pie.
So now that we've talked about good things, yeah. We're going to have to talk about this husband.
Yes, we are.
First let's give a round of applause for Jeremy Sisto's portrayal of a what I would consider probably a narcissistic, but absolutely serial abuser.
Mm, for sure. For sure.
He died. And I also would like to give him a little bit of credit for taking the part. That's not a part that would jump up. Well, I mean, I guess depending on the actor, but there is, from my perspective, there is nothing redeemable about this character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And while it is, so I've heard, fun to play the bad guy in a case like this.
Yeah.
Is it fun? I mean, I'm sure craft-wise he got to stretch and grow and, you know, do whatever. But golly, like, he is the villain.
I would guess that an actor finds the rounded edge to the degree that there is in the Earl character is by how pathetic he is. Mm. There are moments where he – where you get some glimmer of how fragile isn't even the
fragile,
word
yeah.
for what his ego is. Like, it's beyond fragile. And there are a few moments where you see that, and it in no way excuses his behavior. It in no way makes the character sympathetic, but it does just enough shade of empathy where I see the human being that's mm-hmm. there being so cruel and so awful. A couple of years ago, in November of 2016, I was teaching a history film class, and we were coming up on the 80s, and I was going to show a movie from the 80s in our sort of the history of movies, and it was time to do a Hollywood movie, and it was after the election, and I showed Thelma and Louise. I changed the syllabus to watch Thelma and Louise because it felt like the movie to watch at that moment. And Thelma and Louise is a movie that I adore. It's a movie we will cover someday on this podcast. I had not seen it in a while. And so watching it in a raw state after that election, I was used to seeing the Michael McDonald character, the Gina Davis's husband's character in that movie as a mm-hmm. caricature. He is, and it's, mm-hmm. he's certainly more over the top than Jeremy Sisto's portrayal of Earl. But I always saw it as a caricature. I always saw it as either a throwback or like he's just over the top. And watching it with these young students in that moment, on that day, it did not seem like a caricature. Mm-hmm. It seemed all too real. And clearly it comes from my, you know, privilege, my lens.
Right.
I have the option of seeing him as a more funny than dangerous character. Mm-hmm. And the same, I think, is true for this character in this movie, except that this movie treats him a little bit more directly dangerous. I mean, when we see him being physically abusive, but also withholding, quote unquote, withholding things like a car from her because he doesn't want her to be able to go anywhere. You know, I mean, he is so unbelievably manipulative to her in controlling of her in these very, I mean, the questioning whether she can say no to sex because they're married. I mean, this stuff that, again, is not a caricature. He's not playing a caricature. He's playing a person, a recognizable human being, which is what to me makes it all the more kind of frightening. And in this movie, especially that otherwise is so often so sweet, this sort of, leavens that in a way that I think is good for the movie, but is not easy to watch.
No, absolutely. I think insidious is a word that I like to use around this. Mm. And I want to also, again, give Adrienne Shelley, I would say similarly to the complexity of a woman and being a mother and not being a mother. So that's kind of my number one when I think of this movie, like, oh yeah, it's that one where it says you're not a bad person.
Right,
it's,
right.
It's also a movie that highlights, I would say, the insidious nature of emotional and psychological abuse. Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. he also absolutely, we can see, demonstrates physical and sexual abuse as well.
Right.
But the what we see most of all, what we hear about most of the time are those, and the, like the words you said, and I'm writing them down, they're red flag words we use, you know, to look at things a lot, mm-hmm. that he's manipulative, he's isolating, he's mm-hmm. controlling. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just... it is so, so difficult to watch. And
Andy Griffith has a great line when they're at Becky's or Don's wedding, and the Earl shows up. And he does this thing where every time he pulls up the car to pick up Jenna, he honks the horn over and over and over and over and over and over again. So he's doing this up to the party, and he comes into the party, throws a chair, clearly upset, and tells her she's got 30 seconds to get in the car because he's really pissed. And then he walks out, and Andy Griffith says something to Jenna, something to the effect of, wow, you weren't kidding. He really is an asshole or something.
He really is a terrible husband.
He really is a terrible, terrible husband. And it's a moment that is played for laughs to some degree, because it is funny. I mean, his delivery is funny, but also is like, you see him really seeing it there. You see the Andrew Griffith character sort of, he takes a beat before he says it, and his jaw is open, and he's watching this happen, realizing that there's no, there are not two sides to the story. There's one side to the story, and that sort of sinks in for him there. And I think those kind of little moments that Adrienne Shelley allows for and captures and cultivates in this movie are sort of what helps, you know, is part of that sophistication I was talking about.
Absolutely. That's a great scene to talk about. I mean, every time he's on screen, you know, you get very tense. I get very tense. And mm-hmm. and I find him unpredictable from the beginning. You're sort of trying to figure out what his deal is, and it just gets worse and worse. And that, as like you say, other parts of it, it's a sweet movie and it's a sweet moment. They're getting married in the pie diner, Don and Oki. But that is the scariest. I mean, that is a frightening, frightening moment. And I sort of, in that moment, I picture myself more as a party guest. Mm. And what am I going to do?
Yeah, right.
I can't imagine watching her go get in that car. Yeah. And yet, you know, I'm not going to make choices for her.
Right.
And then the scene that follows because he's so angry because she's been squirreling away money to run away. He finds the money. She's, you know, it's under the couch cushions and it's in jars in the kitchen and, you know, places that he doesn't normally look. So he's found all this money and it's, you know, very scary, very volatile. He's yelling at her. He's, I would say, you know, pushing her around a little bit. And then he breaks down because, you know, of his massive insecurity and the who he is as a person.
Yeah.
Because he says multiple times, you can't love the baby more than me. Mm-hmm. And that's
kind of concerning. He makes her promise not to love the baby more than him.
And what I see in it, her performance is exquisite, I think, in that scene, mm-hmm. Carrie Russell's. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm watching her figure out and then decide how to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Because there are right answers and there are wrong answers in that moment. And she's trying to figure out, and this is, you know, this is a game. She's not a game. Pardon me. This is a path she's had to forge before and figure out. And there have been missteps. And by that, I just mean things that set him off, not that she's done anything wrong.
Right, right.
But, you know, she's had to navigate his abuse for so long. And how is she going to do this for her to survive and for this baby to survive? Because by that time, when she's that pregnant,
Yeah.
She does have a relationship with the baby. And
yes,
I want to ask you about that device. So we'll get back to more terrible things about Jeremy Sisto. But, you know, I don't know at what point, because I'm not a film scholar, but, you know, in the middle about of the movie, the two friends give her this book. Then they know she's conflicted about this, and they know some of how terrible he is. I don't know that they know how truly abusive he is.
Yeah.
But so they give her this, you know, mommy to be book that has ideas and questions and comments and whatever. And in the middle of it, Dawn points out, is a place where you can write a letter to your baby. And so then that starts this voiceover that we don't have until then. So it's not a voiceover movie, but in that, you know, after that, it starts, she does start writing this letter to her baby. And sometimes it is very funny and sarcastic. You know, after he finds the money, you know, they go and buy a used crib and he buys a video camera. And she says, you know, if you damn baby, if you ever want to know the damn story of how we got your damn crib, you know, damn crib, damn life, damn baby, whatever. But it also allows her, that mechanism allows her to explore, I think, herself, you know, and her feelings about the whole situation. And that's kind of one way in.
Mm-hmm.
And then also through the relationship with Nathan Fillion, you learn more as well. But what do you think about that device?
I think that this movie earns that device. And I think that because the movie is because she does have conflicted feelings about the baby, it allows us to see how she's beginning to have not to resolve those feelings, but to explore those feelings and to see that she's seeing the baby as or maybe it defines her conflicted feelings a little bit, because it's not about she is having this relationship with the child. Or the baby. Did it bother you? I get the sense that it bothered you.
No, I loved it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you're gonna need a, well, not really. I was gonna say you're gonna need a microscope to find what I don't like about this movie, but it was pointed out to me that it is a trope and that it can be very irritating. And I think because of that specific mechanism and the way it's used, I appreciated it, and I think it does it sort of defines that relationship between it begins to define the relationship between her and the baby,
mm-hmm.
her and the fetus.
Right.
But I sort of feel like it also makes those two a team a little bit, mm-hmm. at that point,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
she and the baby are sort of in this together for better or worse.
Right. Right.
And as much as, you know, her two friends are so much her friends, there are things she's not telling them, and there are parts of it they're not privy to. And this baby is privy to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, she gets, there's that an intimacy there that she gets to share, and by that device shares that with the audience. And so it felt like, you know, it's a strong choice, but here I do. I love it.
Yeah,
love it.
I think it's earned, and I think that it's used pretty sparingly, all things considered, in the movie. It's always doing something different. It's never the same voiceover. I mean, it's never you never think, oh, this is the same thing I heard you saying before about how conflicted you are. Like you're it is expressing the conflicts through the different ways that she talks to and about the baby, the fetus, and the situations that she's in. Can I lodge my main complaint with this movie?
I'd love to hear it.
All right, folks, get ready.
Get ready.
And I think this has more to do with watching it with 2018 eyes, 11 years after it was made. But I find the Dawn Ogie relationship and the way it plays out in the movie a little disturbing.
Yes, I agree.
Where he comes to the diner, the first time we see him, he's come to the diner with flowers and he wants to, she's had this 5-minute date with him and she wanted nothing to do with him. And she spends this whole scene in the diner when she finally sits down across from him, telling him, get out of my face, go away from me. I don't want you. And he keeps saying, you're going to be my wife. I'm in love with you. I'm perfect for you. I mean, she calls him a stalker, and he is a stalker. And what happens in the movie is that relationship ends up being vindicated by the movie, and they end up getting married together. And while the movie that seems to tell us that they are going to be, that they seem to be pretty good for one another by the time we see them at the wedding, my skin was crawling in that scene. And it just felt like it was reinforcing all the things we're trying to teach young people, reinforcing all the things we're trying to teach young people to avoid in terms of the way that they should have expectations about how to pursue romantic encounters and deal with partners, and taking, no, I don't want to date you as an answer, as opposed to, so many romantic comedies being, it's just persistence. You just keep going, and eventually you'll gaslight him or something will happen. And and as I say, it felt maybe a little of a time, I mean, it's I think it's meant to be a reversal and kind of played for a laugh, but I wasn't laughing in that scene.
Yeah. I'm certainly not here to, excuse a persistence stalker non-consensual at whatever points relationship. I choose not to defend that.
I'm not expecting
you to. I agree. It's not great, and I think it does with time get worse. Mm-hmm. Or is an example of what not to do. I can't really, it's not a perfect film.
Yeah. I feel like she is so good at finding at sort of navigating complex issues and emotions and feelings, and is so in tune with her cast and her story. I fundamentally believe if she made the film today, she'd make a different choice there. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like maybe it's just me, just my awareness has been heightened on that. But I hear that more and more in the conversation, calling out these kinds of scenes and these kinds of story arcs as problematic in a way that I just don't think anybody, do you know what I mean?
I think that would be a fun sort of experiment, is how do you rewrite that arc in a way that is less problematic? Mm-hmm. Could it be that she goes on a date with him and is not interested? And then she changes her mind and sort of chases him a bit. Like, I don't know. There could be ways to do that, to still come up with a solution that they are two misfits who have found each other.
Yes, exactly. Or maybe he's just a little less persistent, or she's a little more unsure, rather than just being, no, get out
but
of
I
my
mean,
face.
But I mean, yeah, if of, when he said, I won't take no for an answer, of course I was cringing, because that puts him in the same bucket as Jeremy Sisto, who doesn't take no for an
exactly,
answer.
Right, exactly, right.
Yeah, and these two characters are, I think, meant to be very different, but they have that in common.
Right.
And so I think just speaks to how ubiquitous those kind of storylines and those kind of messages are, that even in a film that's pointing out how not to be in a relationship, they're going to miss some of these things that we previously would have thought were, oh, that's so cute, or look at him, he's gonna get the girl. So yeah, it's not good.
But it's over fleetingly.
Okay, if we're looking at the movie as a whole, like you say, they all have stories, and she does have she's an interesting character. And
which one
I'm
are you talking
about? Dawn now? And has I don't know. She's trying to figure it out. And in the end, she decides that she can give Oki a chance. But yes, I do wish that, particularly their conversation, that first conversation in the diner. Like you say, maybe if she was just unsure, maybe that would solve some of that for us.
Yeah. And being uncomfortable could still be funny, but maybe not be so squicky.
Also,
that actor is – oh, go ahead.
I was just going to add, I mean – Nathan Fillion, beyond the having an affair, she's in the diner and breaks up with him. And he does leave, you know, she sort of goes back and looks, and he's gone, as she has asked him to do. But then the next time we see him, he is waiting outside her house for her husband to leave and shows up unannounced. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's just that humans are problematic.
Yeah. And there is and maybe men, you know, maybe what the movie is saying in particular is that these men are all particularly problematic in specific ways. But you know, look, I guess what I'm saying is I forgive the movie that scene. Mm-hmm. That was like the one sour note in the movie, right. And a movie that otherwise was, as I say, not just sweet, but sort of beautifully complex in a lot of ways. But that was the scene that was like, I don't know about that. That actor though was great. Eddie Jemison, who's been in a bunch of Soderbergh movies, all the Oceans movies, and he's in Schizopolis and The Informant. So go over and listen to all those movies on Cinemakers, the other podcast that I do sometimes.
I'm glad you found it. That was a quiz, you know, which of these things does not belong? And it was the stalking part of their relationship. So
we found it. We found the thing.
Good work you did.
I'm glad I found that.
You did so well.
Good. I passed then, huh?
You did pass. We talked about the end a little bit, but I do want to hit sort of like two more notes about the end and ask you a question about it. Because another trope that I have my antenna sort of up for is this idea that you didn't know love until you've had a child. Or I didn't know if I wanted a baby and then I saw her and I couldn't let her go. And these things that are likely true in some way to people. I mean, I think it is hard to use words for, you know, feelings that run that deep. And so the words that come out sometimes I think are not great. And so as someone without children to hear that, I'm like, okay, super. So in this case, with kind of that setup, how do you feel about that moment in this movie when she's looking away, and then they hand her her baby?
I noted that in as well when that scene came up, because in a lot of movies, this would be a place I would say, "Oh, really? we're gonna do this scene?" You know, I think that, but this isn't most movies, and. Because she has been so conflicted about having a baby through the course of the whole movie, that this is a resolution to a sort of complication that's already been worked through. And it's as though she had to, that this character, not true for everybody, not in everybody's experience, but this character, the journey through that she took through this sort of complication or complicated feelings about how she feels about having a baby, that brought her to a place where she was ready when she saw Lulu to be transported in that moment. And not everybody has that experience, and that's okay. And it could be that another person's, you know, it's just going to be a different path for everybody. And if this were a different movie and there hadn't been such attention paid to and, allowance is not the right word, but and the celebration isn't quite either, but articulation of how complicated her feelings were, then that moment would have rung false, I think, and you might have wanted complication there. I liked that moment. I think that moment works in this movie because she's had to go through so much. It feels like she has earned it and the movie has earned it at this moment. But I did have that note. There's so many times, or there are a number of times in the movie where events like that happen, and I think, oh man, another movie that would not work. But you know what? This one's got it. This one found a way to do that moment. So for me, it worked. It worked pretty well. I assume that it works for you too. But did it?
It did. So as a person, clearly I have disclosed that I'm sensitive to those things. And it did, even while I was watching it for that, thinking like, oh, am I going to have to admit that I hate this? Because it falls into that thing that really categorizes me as less than in some way. And I may be less than in some way, but
you were less than in no way.
But for me, what I got from it this time was that having the baby was, for her, what gave her the perspective to really sort of step outside her situation and figure out what she was going to do. And that it could have been something else. It could have been winning the pie contest. It could have been, it could have been old Joe dying. I mean, I don't know, it happened to be the catalyst for that. And the way that, she holds the baby and has that moment of clarity, which does happen a lot. I just think that how it's used here, is charming and complex in a way that many are not. And she's has the moment with the baby. It all comes, I feel like, just into laser focus. Mm-hmm. And she's not only just says, I don't want to be with you, but like, I haven't loved you for a long time. You're terrible. Don't get anywhere near me. This is over. I mean, she is.
Yeah. If you come near me, I will flatten you and I will enjoy it. You know, like she lays it all out in a commanding way. Yeah. But not a, how do you describe how she says
it's
that?
It's in a way that she's talked to other people in the film. We've seen her have that kind of command elsewhere, but she was not in a position in this very, very abusive and not only just like, oh, it's abuse and that's terrible, but she has lived with that. She's been broken down by
that.
As
you said,
For, it sounds like, since her early adulthood. I mean, since what I get, and I don't know how much I've made up in my brain versus what's real, but let's say for 10 years, she's been dealing with, that is so much more complex those of us not in that situation cannot possibly understand how that affects a person day to day and your reaction. So,
and what it must take to say these things in this way, in this moment, to this person.
Well, and she, I think I love when she brings up during the, so she has a very sexual affair with Nathan Fillion and then an emotional affair with him, sort of like the opposite of what we tend to hear about in these stories. But she says specifically how not only did he change, which we know, abusers do. They start very charming and may still maintain, probably being charming and, the cycles of all that. But that, he changed and that how hard it is to be so poor, like to be a woman and be poor and be this, And I think that for me, that could have been highlighted more that, economic stability and or instability is such a huge barrier to folks making changes like that. And where would she feel safe? And I feel like holding the baby in her arms in the hospital in that moment that, gave her the that boost to be able to end it like that. And then I love that she continues to have she says that to Earl, then she continues to have that moment with her baby and the rest of the room is blurry.
We don't
hear exactly what's said. We know that, Nathan Fillion gets between Carrie Russell and Jeremy Sisto, and then two orderlies come in and, we don't know what happens next. I hope that a law enforcement is called and that we get some protective orders going right away and all that. Who knows? She sort of dispatches him. And then, like you said in your summary, as she's leaving the hospital, she, without the, malice, of course. With a completely different set of circumstances, ends with Nathan Fillion. And I loved the way that she said, this could be drawn out and we could spend years hurting ourselves and hurting each other, or we could just end it right now. I was just, honestly, I've carried that to other relationships. I think I've cribbed that speech other times because we do. And I've told people that, you can continue to break up for 6 months or a year, or you could just be done.
Because we've all done that. We've all been in those relationships where we've clung longer than we should have, for sure.
Absolutely. So I love that. But then again, because it is because there's the sweetness of this particular pie, it's roll me away and then roll me back, because she's giving him one last treat, which I assume yes. is like a moon pie that she made. That's my assumption, because it's in a package. But I think she deserves just a press at the pie diner. They have to have to-go things. Anyway, yeah, I think it's a homemade moon pie.
Because, yeah, it doesn't feel like he deserves a out-of-the-vending-machine moon pie.
No.
You know?
And then roll me away. and then she tells her friends they didn't know. And I love that.
Like immediately. Yeah.
Oh, I had an affair with him. Yeah, I thought that all those moments had such care and
they're deeply just satisfying. Good. Deeply satisfying. Yeah.
Deeply satisfying. Like a pie should be.
Yes, yes.
And speaking of ways a pie should be.
Yes.
Tobin, would you like to play a game?
Always.
Well, full disclosure. Mm-hmm. We did not grow up in a pie full household.
No. I don't think I really actually tried a pie until I was in high school.
And it was Meuniers.
Yeah, absolutely it was Meuniers. Yeah. It was great. Strawberry rhubarb.
Strawberry rhubarb or chocolate. That she does that chocolate one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And please, mother, understand your cookies are the most amazing thing on earth. And the Care Bear cakes.
Yes.
Undeniable. It just happened to be not a pie household.
Right. No, we grew up with one hell of a baker for
amen.
I mean, the birth roll rolls and cookies and very, you know, top notch. Just not pies.
There's no pies. So you might have trouble with this game, Tobin.
Okay.
But that's okay. And I would encourage those at home to play along. Go ahead and join us. Virtually, of course.
Do I open this box that you sent me and get out my fork now?
No, that would be great.
Just kidding.
And keeping in mind that pie is a bit of a loose term. Here, you know, we understand that quiche counts as pie. Uh-huh. That there's spaghetti pie, that there's meat pies if you're watching the British baking show. So this game is called There's a Pie for That. I'm going to give you a potentially awkward situation.
Okay.
And you are going to, Jenna Hunterson style, build the pie that would be appropriate.
Oh, great. Okay, great.
Okay. If you were ghosting someone on Tinder, what pie would you send that message with?
All right. So I am the ghoster. I'm the ghost who's giving the pie to the ghosted.
Yes. Going to be it's your last goodbye, really.
Okay. So it would just be a piece of pie, and it would be like not old, but like, a pecan pie a few days after Thanksgiving. Maybe wrapped in tinfoil,
Yeah.
With absolutely. a plastic fork.
Not a lot of effort.
No. Just
not time sensitive.
Afterthought,
I like it.
Right? Like the message is clear. Yeah. I'm not here anymore.
I like it. Okay, this next one has a part A and a part B.
Okay.
Ready?
Yep.
Calling someone the wrong name, part A, in class. What pie would you create to write that wrong? You called someone the wrong name in class.
I'm going to borrow one of her pies. She does this pie in the movie that starts with brie cheese being sort of spread out in little sections in the bottom of the pie. Maybe it's more of the quiche pie and there's ham in it and stuff. So I would do something with some sort of surprisingly sort of tasty, smelly-ish cheese in it as an apology there.
Excellent. Okay. Now part B, you called someone the wrong name in bed.
Oh, okay, so I'm going to bake three pies. I'm going to do a fruit pie, probably a lot of strawberry, maybe even some like sugar on top. I'm going to do a sweet but a sort of spicy pie, like a pumpkin with a lot of nutmeg. And then I'm going to do a meat pie because the meat of the apology is what's really important. And you need to have, I want to provide meals all day long, right? So some kind of like a lamb pie.
Interesting. I really like the depth to which you wanted to apologize there.
Well, man, that's you know, calling it's someone the wrong bad. Name in class is a smaller infraction, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, two more. If you are in a position where you need to confront a coworker who is not doing their job right or well, and it's impacting your job.
Okay, so this is one of those pies that's like this very, very light, right? So it's like a custard pie, you know, like it's not, or maybe even like the pie that's mostly like whipped cream, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's very sweet and very light, and you probably can't have more than a piece of it, but it still shows that you have. Because what you're going to talk to them about is more important than the pie. So they're going to take a bite and they're going to say, oh, that's nice. And then you're going to get into what you need to say.
Nice.
I don't want the pie to conflict with the message there. I want to be heard. Sure. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then finally, and this one, it just really depends on how you feel about this situation. Going to the movie theater by yourself.
I love going to the movie theater by myself. Okay, so if I'm going to movie theater by myself, I'm going to make that first pie I ever had. I'm going to find Munyer's recipe for strawberry rhubarb pie, which I'm sure I maybe took bites of pie before that, but that's the pie I took a bite and said, oh, I see what pie can be. And I would want something that I, that I held dear as I went to do this thing that I enjoy so much.
Excellent. I enjoyed that more than I thought I would. Kind of like pie. you know, if listeners want to tweet at us what pie they would build to go to the movies by themselves, I encourage them to do so.
Or what pie you'd build to come to movies with us.
Oh, even better. Pies to share. What pies pie do you want share. To share with us, folks?
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us.
Hashtag pie share.
Hashtag pie share, indeed. Well, wrapping things up, now is the time when we make our final decision. We get out our rubber stamps and we stamp this film progressive or regressive. Is this movie a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera? Tobin, what say you?
No surprise, this is absolutely progressive. It is a delightful, whimsical, but also heartfelt, serious, complex, sophisticated movie that I was not prepared to thoroughly enjoy as much as I did. I knew I would like it. I didn't know that it would be so not just enjoyable, but as I say, sort of sophisticated. And I'm really glad I finally saw it. This is not the last time I'll see this movie. I will definitely see it again. But I want to see the rest of my time to you because I feel like this movie is very close to your heart, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about Waitress.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you will watch it again. Even more, I think, impactful. I hope that you find some way to teach this movie.
Mm-hmm.
If we're looking at, you know, this came out 11 years ago and Adrienne Shelley wrote and directed it and was in it. So she was doing all the work and with it, with a team of other women and men and perhaps non-binary folks. We don't know. But so she's got, you know, she got this done then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, is a female main character with, like you said, well-rounded sidekicks. And it's a female character, main character, who is very flawed and who makes perhaps poor choices along the way. Mm-hmm. We didn't really dwell on the fact that they were both cheating, I think, mm-hmm. because the story is so great. So I'm always impressed when I watch this movie. I'm always delighted. And then I'm always very, very sad. Because unfortunately, this is the last, you know, completed piece we have. And I'm so sad for what we all missed out on.
But I also love the legacy it leaves, not only for with the Adrienne Shelley Foundation and other awards in her honor, but also a musical written by Sarah Bareilles. So, you know, pushing forward another woman who has worked so hard in her career and gave her the opportunity to do something different. It was the, you know, first time that she had written for Broadway and then appeared on Broadway in it. Mm. So I think the legacy it leaves behind is something to be very proud of. And that's all.
Thank you for sharing this movie with me, but also, and for being sort of open and vulnerable with all of us in your sort of feelings about this movie and sharing as much as you did. That's not always an easy thing to do. And it's a brave thing to do. And you're not the only one to have these feelings, I'm sure. And I'm proud of you for being as open with us as you were.
Well, thank you. It all depends on how you edit it.
Yes, true. Next up, we are going to talk about another movie that has made its way to Broadway. How's that for a segue? We are going to discuss the Disney extravaganza Frozen in 2 weeks on September 18th, a film written by and co-directed by a woman we've talked about on this podcast before, someone I went to film school with. Jen Lee. So that's I'm looking forward to that conversation, to digging into our first animated film, right? Is this our first step into animation?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Also two female leads.
So come back and check us out September 18th. You can find our episode for Frozen. Aislinn.
Yes.
Do you want to be found these days? And if so, where can people find you to tell you what kinds of pie that they would like to bring you?
You know, I am recommitting to Twitter and or email. I have this Cage Club email. No one has emailed me.
Tell us what it is again. Give us the Cage Club email.
Well, if you go to cageclub.me and find my host profile, there'll be a little button. And that will allow you to email me. And you could email Tobin if you found his as well. That'd be fun. But if you would like to find me there, find me there. If you would like to find me on Twitter, I am at SassyNerdMT. And I promise to be more active and talk about pie and other things. As the summer ends and the for me school year begins, I'm gonna get back to it. How about you, Tobin? Where can folks find you?
They could find me on Twitter at Tobin Addington. And you can find us at facebook.com/thecontenderspod or on Twitter at contenders_pod. Tell us what pie you'd like to bring to come to the movies with us. We here at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network for all those great shows, including a new show they have, Foodie Films Podcast, which felt like it was appropriate to plug as we talk about Waitress, this clearly being a foodie film. Check out Kyle's new show on the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can find out about that show and other shows going to cageclub.me or on facebook.com. Oh my God. You can find out about that show and other great shows by going to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub. And you can find them at Cage Club Pod on Twitter.
You can find all the Cage Club Network shows on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, please subscribe, rate and review. Tell us how much you enjoy pie and women and movies and Tobin and me and our guests. Just really write us a book. We'd love it. The reviews help us spread the word and, you know, better understand our audience, which is always a goal. If you leave a comment that I really like, we might read it on an upcoming show. And with that, we're going to finish this podcast. I am Aislinn Addington.
I am Tobin Addington, and we'll see you next time on The Contenders.
Producer is Danielle Renfro Behrens. Sorry, do that again.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Vaginas are as funny as genitals are funny.
There you go. Yeah. And boy, are they funny. That's a different podcast. Boy, are my genitals funny. TM, TM. Okay, sorry.
That's right.